Hi, Gabriel. How are you doing?
Morning, Adam. Nice to see you again. It's been quite a few years. Let's try to calculate how much was it since we last met in person.
The others calculated as for us, 11. So okay. I saw that now the Transylvania Jux CEOs and CTOs calculated it last time I was 11 years ago right now.
Yeah. So
in Cluj. But we will discuss this as well. But what's interested me the most, what was your first computer?
My first computer was called Felix HC91. It was built in Romania in a city at the border with Hungary. Back in communism years, there was a little factory for producing computers needed for, let's call it, universities or research. Uh-huh. And after the communism era finished in 1990, my parents managed to buy one for me, because back in those days, even buying one was not... I had to open the Wikipedia to remember what were its specs, because all it had was the keyboard, and I had the cable to plug it to a black and white TV.
Mm-hmm. So, do you know which computer it was compatible? Was it like Sinclair ZX Spectrum compatible, or was it just a Romanian invention?
It was based on the Z80 microprocessor.
Yeah, that's what I thought, because
Z80. So 60 kilobytes of ROM and 64 RAM. Yeah.
But this is not bad. It's actually quite a lot.
And BASIC was the first programming language, and I had stereo cassettes, like cassettes on those cassettes I was loading.
And were the cassettes included with the machine, or were it?
No, uh-huh. There were separate shops. I was like video game shops where you.
No. But the device to play or to load the cassettes.
No.
Was it included, or you had to plug your own? Player.
No, my parents had to buy, like I was using this Sony Walkman player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So did it was like you used a Sony player?
After using some other cassette player, I ended up having a Sony Walkman. I don't know whether it was 94 or 93.
Because it was very common to do that, to use an already existing mono, usually, mono player is one of stereos, like mono. And and I was a little bit jealous, because I think the data set on C64 was able to find the beginning of the program, because there were you could put on the cassette multiple programs or games or apps or whatever. So with the Spectrum, with the first one, you had to use external one. Mine was already Amstrad, was more sophisticated. It already had an integrated data set, or how to call it, and playing device, but also with cassettes. So what was your first action on the computer? You immediately started programming, or you played games?
My first ever interaction was at my cousin. Mm-hmm. My aunt was a teacher, so she bought for their kids. So I remember going to a birthday party of my cousin, and when I arrived, they were all lying on the floor in front of this weird box I've never seen, and some keyboard. It was actually a bit bigger than a keyboard, that was all. And the computer came with a little manual where it was printed a few programs. And I remember typing to build a watch, to see the second, the minute, the hour. It was some program, a piece of code that I remember typing and not finding what combinations to type, because it was like similar to how shift or caps lock, it had some colors. And I remember writing with my cousin.
If you put the R button, it was run, right? So it was like a macros encoded in the keyboard. Was it like this?
Not exactly. It did have, I remember, red, green, and black colors. Mm-hmm. And you had to hold some key to be able to, for example, on on the keyboard, on the key G, it was the go-to instruction, but...
I think this was very similar to the first ZX Spectrum. It was also the same. So you had, you know, interesting. Yeah. So, and I also wanted to actually implement an analog watch. The problem is you had to use some, you know, arithmetic, so math, you know, you had to use, and this was, crazy, you know, because,
But I remember typing and not knowing what that is, like.
Yeah, I also tried that, but I also always did a mistake and it never worked. This was the problem. It was very frustrating experience. I spent, you know, entire morning typing and it never worked. And so what I did then, I just played with loops and if else's. And hope that it will work right.
I found this picture.
By the way, the video is not recorded. It's video just for us.
Okay.
For us. But I will put the thing to the show notes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fine.
But it looks actually nice.
Yeah. So that was one. Let's see what else. It had a.
Wow. It was actually not bad. I think it was the most sophisticated communist computer, as far as I see. So,
well, they began creating it in 1985, and the actual first version was a bit. Mine was the version from 1981.
Mm-hmm. And the BASIC was in English, because
yes, English.
And you learned programming, or you started gaming, or what was it?
I actually started gaming on these cassettes. I remember playing games like similar to Mario or BASIC.
Were these remakes or were the origin games working, you know, with...
No, remakes. They remakes. Were remakes.
Okay.
Remakes. I remember playing in my let's call them BASIC school years up until I turned 13. It was mostly games. And then I applied to a high school. I remember being 13, finishing eighth grade, and applying. And there was one high school in my hometown in the north of Romania at the border with Ukraine. One high school which had a class which was a so-called informatics class. So they were teaching like 8 hours of programming or informatics, how they were labeling it back then. Mm-hmm. And I remember having to do some tests, some math tests, to be able to be qualified to enter that class. And then I studied in high school Pascal, the first university year, first high school year. I remember.
But this is crazy. Pascal. This was early. When was it?
1997. So in that hometown, in my hometown, there was a so-called center of...
It's Cluj?
No, it's north of Cluj, 150 kilometers north of Cluj. There was a little so-called... We looked at it as a normal building, but inside of it, they had some computers back then, like on the printed, with the printed paper and cards you have to put in, like those mainstream... big machines that looked very weird. So some folks from that organization became teachers after communism era. So the teachers I had were actual former employees who knew or had some basic knowledge of how to use these card instructions machines.
You were really lucky. You were fortunate that actually you got so good teachers.
Yes, if I look back, I think the answer is yes. I remember doing homeworks. I remember practicing. Pascal had that blue background.
Turbo Pascal, right? I think.
Yeah.
And was it still on the machine? No more.
On
PC.
286, maybe. Oh, or okay. 386 okay. In school.
Okay, yeah,
but when I passed these tests to enter high school, then my parents bought me what back then was a Pentium 1, 166. When I pressed the button, I could see the number 166 megahertz.
My first was 66, 95. I think 66, and the 166 was already, I don't know, third or fourth.
But I started with this. Let's say 1985 Z80 processor, and then only, I don't know, 7 or 8 years afterwards, when I entered high school, I got this Pentium 1.
Yeah. What you did with it? gaming again, or?
Well, I remember at home doing homeworks or, coding for what I got as homeworks. And
it was still high school, or was it already?
Yeah, high school. Uh-huh. High okay. school.
Uh-huh.
Gaming, I was passionate about snooker, but my video card had only 1 megabyte, so there was a snooker mm-hmm. game that was crashing. I remember playing Need for Speed when it was launched, Need for Speed 1, but my computer struggled. And some, like, car-related cars. I was passionate about cars. That's how, at one point, I remember being told by Auto Motor und Sport Zeitung from Germany that I was the second person who ever made a subscription from Romania.
Wow. Because it would be interesting who was the first one, you know? So it was.
I think it was the person who created the same or bought the license in Romania. There was a person, Dan Vardie, who created and even had the TV show with cars in Romania. But they got some sort of license to generate the TV show in Romanian TV station with the same label, Auto, Motor, and Sport. But I was passionate about cars, and that's why, like, all the games that I could find were cars related.
Ah, interesting. I never read, actually, Auto, Motor, Sport. I only know that it exists. But but I have a famous guest now on my the first time, you know, on my channel. Someone was the second person in Romania who actually subscribed to Auto, Motor, and Sport, right?
Well, I remember my parents struggled to pay. It was an expensive subscription.
How old were you back then with Auto, Motor,
12.
Sport? Okay. So this was... Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, and this is, and you had to learn German then, right?
Well, I had to learn, I mean, I had to, between brackets. There's a long story with how I ended up learning German, but it's basically due to the Second World War. My grandmother had a very close friend who, after the war, left to Germany. So mm-hmm. after communism era ended, that friend of her invited her to visit, to go to Germany, but my parents couldn't take a holiday. So then they told me, your grandma wants to see her friend, but we can't send her alone. You need to learn German so that you can go with her for summer there.
Ah.
So I ended up taking some evening, like 1 hour a week, German mm-hmm. lesson from an old lady in my hometown. Before I traveled to Germany.
And I thought you learned German because of Auto, Motor, and Sport. So this would be...
Well, maybe after, because I was 11 when I started. So I think maybe my trip to Germany back then was the trigger for me wanting to see this newspaper and to read about cars.
Oh, okay.
I saw it there in Germany. I didn't have other ways to learn about it.
Okay.
So that's my history with German. I initially learned because of my parents said so.
I guess.
But then I continued after my trip to Germany.
Uh-huh. I was now at a conference in Cluj, and I had a chat with the developers. And they speak actually German very well, and I asked them how hard is it to learn. And it's actually pretty hard for Romanian to learn German. This is not, you know, this is a complete different concept. Mm-hmm.
But, maybe TV stations also contributed to that. When I was a teenager, we had German TV stations that were broadcasted and were available. Also,
You are hitting the mic, I think, because
sorry, uh-huh. I moved my hand. Yes, so I do remember watching a lot of German TVs.
Uh-huh. Cool. Now. You at the high school, which is incredible, you could already program very well because there was a secret building in north of Cluj and all the teachers, right, left the building to teach you Turbo Pascal.
Some of the teachers, some of the persons chose this path to be teachers, yeah. So
they were good teachers. Was it interesting, actually, right?
Well, for them, it was a career change. Imagine
yeah, this is what I think. This is it could be. I mean, they don't have to be necessarily good teacher if they worked for such organization. This is what
they tried. To be honest, they tried some. Sometimes we were laughing at them. Sometimes making jokes and not respecting them enough. If I look back in time, but there was one lady who was also passionate about teaching, and I think it helped her to improve, because she had a son who was 1 or 2 years older than us, than my generation. I wasn't excelling in informatics. I must admit, like, even the local, I didn't pass at some point the local level of Olympic, so-called Olympic competitions. So I was sometimes, I remember that feeling like, why couldn't I come up with this idea, or why this algorithm, or why couldn't I build this?
But I was curious, and I look at such, you know, exercises and tasks for Olympics, and I took a look at them, and then I thought I was absolutely not motivated to do anything with it, because I said, okay, I mean, why I should do this, you know? This was so far away from real world that for me it was really hard to even look at this. So really, and even recently, I was really curious, and I took a look. It's like, oh man, I have to really think, you know. And after that, maybe I become a little bit better, but it does nothing for my current, you know, project. So this is like this is a little bit the problem. If there will be nearer to my task or whatever, I will be super motivated. But right now, I look from time to time. Some are, you know, shortest path. Maybe you could apply it somewhere or something like this. But most of them is just brain training, right? So it's like thinking hard about an algorithm. And usually, maybe there is a difference between software engineering and computer science. You know, we are applying a fraction of the computer science to real world problems, and the computer science. Maybe that's the difference, right? So maybe our Olympics like hackathon, you know, do whatever you like and to be successful. And yeah, this is misunderstanding what it should be. Yeah.
Hearing you made my memory go back in time to the towers of Hanoi.
Mm-hmm.
If there's one thing that comes to my mind is my memory of irritation on why or how can I solve that problem? How would that be possible? How can I, like, I remember this. I remember struggling with that problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So high school was this kind of like more intense.
Which is unique. Was 12. This is crazy.
Yeah, I started high school at 14, finished at 18. In Romania, it's 4 years, the high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of high school, you had to build a project, a so-called, to get some diploma that you can operate a machine.
Uh-huh. And what did you build?
Yeah, I built that game where you had to guess a word, otherwise you are hanged. How is it called in English? Do you have to guess the letters in a word?
Uh-huh.
But every word or every letter you miss.
I don't even know.
You get drawn on a piece of paper.
Parts of it's like word puzzle or something like this, right? Like,
yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. I forgot the name in English, I must admit. So
you have words, they're like, you know, in horizontal and vertical, and you have to find...
No. Just guessing a word. So you have to guess a word.
Okay, this I don't know. Okay.
But you start, you see just... empty spaces.
Yeah.
So you see the first letter and the last letter of the word, and you have to guess.
Yeah, you could extend it to guess a password, you know. So this is the first, you know, hacking experience.
Yeah, indeed. So it had to have some UI or some basic UI experience, as in typing a letter, and then whether that letter was part of the word or not, you either got that letter in the word, and you would see where, in which position that letter is.
And you built it with Pascal?
Yeah. That's what I
mean. Delphi or...
Sorry?
Delphi? Delphi, you know?
No, Pascal.
Okay.
Pascal.
And was it fun?
Well, I remember the pressure more than the fun. The pressure of, oh, I have to make this work for the end of year. I have to submit. I have to present. I have to make it run with I have to create a database for words, or I have to, how do I make it? How do I keep track? How do I design this? How do I make it work? That I remember the stress behind building more than the fun.
Okay.
More than the fun, yeah. Somehow, then, but that's the way, like, I maybe there was this competitiveness, you know, like who builds something. I remember feeling like I'm not meeting the bar compared to my colleagues, like others were doing a lot of more visual.
This is what's always also in my case, you know, that it's like, okay, how they know it that much, you know, the others were always, you know, seem to be way better than me. And I said, it's just crazy. And interesting. So what happened after high school?
I moved to Cluj. I did some tests to enter the computer science degree. So that's something, there's something funny how things happened. I back then, to enter university, there was a test. And at the end of the test, you left the room, and then the teacher was bringing one by one each student in the room, and they were comparing your results and against the actual results, and then they would tell you a score. So I remember exiting the room and telling my father, I'm sorry, I don't think I did a good job, and I'm concerned, or something like that. And then
what did your father said then?
Something like, let's see, we'll see, we'll figure something, something like that. But I remember entering that room when the teacher compares your results, and then that person stood up and shook hands and said, congratulations, you did everything correct.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe it initially. But what happened was, of course, everyone, I mean, there was a lot of competition, like in the whole Transylvania, children wanted, or many kids wanted to be accepted at computer science. So what happened was, everyone was reading the list or looking at the results, and everyone was trying to see, okay, who got it, who got in, or who are those children? So I remember the following. The results, the final results, was a combination of how you finished high school. Maybe heard of the word baccalaureate. So there was an overall rating for graduation of high school, and then an average between that and your exam at the university. So somehow on those lists, at the on the final lists, I got second, because there was a girl from another town who had a higher rating in terms of the overall high school average. And in my first day, actually the evening, the so-called Sunday evening before university year started in the campus in Cluj, in the university campus, when I was shaking hands with other boys or colleagues and I was telling my name, they were like, oh, so you are that guy. You are that guy who was the second. How did you solve those problems? Or tell me how you solved that. How did you know how to solve that problem? So what struck me is, I was there leaving my home nest, you know. My parents dropped me with the backpack in another city, in a new world I have never experienced.
So you are the famous the second time, you know. You are the second subscriber of Automotorsport. And now you are, you know, the the second student in computer science.
But that pressure that I felt back then, like, oh, these guys are chasing me now 2 months after the exams. So let's say the exam for university were early July or something like that. And the university year starts 1st of October. So in my mind, I was like, what's happening? These guys are asking me, how did I solve a problem 2 months ago? I don't know. I don't remember. My brain was into getting my driver's license.
Okay.
Because my parents challenged me, no, you're not getting money to do the driver license school until you finish with everything university related. So the social pressure back then was to, when you get 18, to get a driver's license so you can drive through the city. And So the whole summer before university was about me graduating, getting the driver's license. Mm-hmm. That's all I cared, and not talking to others about how I solve a problem in the exam. So I do remember that I started the year with that pressure of, or how I perceive it now as pressure of, oh, they see me second, I need to perform, I need to have good results, I need to have good good output. But the one interesting point that I think defined or contributed to my career was in my high school, in my hometown, there was a guy 2 or 3 years older, maybe three, let's say 3 years older than me. And that guy, before starting university with a few days, told me, go and submit and do the test for entering the so-called class, the computer science class taught in English. Uh-huh. So the Technical University of Cluj-Napoca did have a group of 25 or 50, two groups, I don't remember, one or two groups, where they were teaching in English. Uh-huh. So I was like, dude, you're crazy. Why are you suggesting me? He said, trust me, it's not obvious. Trust me, it will be lighter than in the Romanian taught version. So I did blindly apply that guy's advice. I did go and pass some tests to enter the group taught in English. And that guy played another role. He told me the following: whatever you get in school in terms of like courses, read Thinking in Java.
Uh-huh.
So it was 2001. I think Bruce Eckel's version of the book was maybe second at max or third edition. I remember having that PDF. And I remember starting the first university year with that PDF, which I got from that guy.
Nice guy.
He was a few years older than me. Yes, he was. It's an interesting story as well.
It's almost like metrics, you know. Whatever you do, read Thinking in Java. No, so this is it.
But it wasn't easy, and I wasn't consistent. I wasn't as consistent or almost, I had almost no consistency turning that or opening that file maybe once or twice a month. But in my first week, I don't remember the name of that course, but I remember being in a big auditorium and a very big blackboard with the teacher using some chalk that was making a lot of itchy noises. Mm-hmm. And that teacher writing by hands on the blackboard the Hello World Java class and this basic public static void main. And I do remember not understanding anything. Like, we were like looking at each other. What is this guy writing? What is that? I didn't even know.
This is why they made, you know, just main, void main in Java 25. It's just, you know, because of your experiences. Now they simplified that.
So that's how I started with Java. It was a combination in university first year. There was some course on Java, but
also early 2001. The Java was 6 years old. It was JDK 1.2 as it started.
And there was a university teacher. I forgot their name. I would like to call that person's name out here in your recorded version, but I don't know it right now. I don't remember it. There was a teacher who wrote the first Java-related book in Romanian with explanations and codes. That teacher was, of course, for 2001 or 2000 when they printed the first version. Hands down to that person. They ended up with setting up a very large organization or software development company in Cluj-Napoca back then. Yeah. So university was about me trying or progressing in the world of Java.
And you liked that, or was it like?
Yeah. Somehow that resonated with me. And I felt somehow I have an anti or some kind of like hate relationship with any other programming language. Like I hated C, I hated, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Back then I was at this very simplistic, like love relationship with Java, but then others, mm-hmm. other languages I was struggling with. To do the grades, to do the assignments, or I was asking for a friend's help, or these kind of things for doing assignments for labs or passing exams in other in other courses that were not with Java. And after my third university year, I applied for an internship in a German. Or in a company that was focused on the German market. And I got a job as a full-time Java developer for being a member inside a team who was outsourcing for a company based in Frankfurt. And that company, I do remember even now their name, GIP GmbH, Gesellschaft für innovative Personalwirtschaftssysteme.
Wow, not bad. Okay.
But I had to write Java codes in German. I had to write method names, class names, everything had to be in German.
I hated that. Because the mix of German and English is really strange. And this it leads to unmaintainable code. So this is sometimes, okay, there are some, you know, very specific domain names. So maybe, but it is, yeah. But back then it was very common, you know. There were lots of banks and insurances which also did it, but it was really hard. Mm-hmm.
So the combination, the reason I got that internship was not because of my technical skills. It was mostly because I knew German, so I could talk to people in
very good.
German.
So the another, you know, yeah, a lucky accident, right?
Yeah, things connect, yes. And I remember... that company had built some wrappers on top of their legacy systems. And some dude in Germany designed the architecture in such a way that EJBs were communicating with that legacy system. Mm-hmm. And we, as in, I was part of a two-person team who was building the UI with Swing. Mm-hmm. So I remember having to learn Swing, and it was horrible, I must admit, for me back then.
Come on, layout managers are fun.
It was complicated for me, I must admit. But I was struggling to do, if I look back in time, my day was like starting at, wake up at 6, go do some work at the office, maybe between 7 and 9, then take a bus, go to university, then come back for making some other progress, then going again to the lab. So my focus was split. I actually, I don't know how I pulled it off. 2 years of both university and doing...
Same here. I did the same for commercial work, actually, not internship. This also
no, this was not... My work was not internship. I was a commercially...
Oh, this is same here. So during university, so I really was, I only waited until the university ends. So I only have to work, you know. This double thing was really crazy, right?
I did that and I felt like there was, maybe the right word is an anxiety. I felt an anxiety to do something before I graduate, because then I was feeling like, oh, if I graduate or if I'm searching for a job together with 300 others, then what are my chances of getting a job after graduating? I might have lower chances, so let me start sooner.
But you are actually right. This was also my impression. So also anxiety. So this is all about anxiety. And it's actually a good idea, you know, just to take ownership or to control a little bit your destination.
Destiny,
right?
Yeah, it is. But when you live in a dorm in a room with four others, and then... others are enjoying life and playing Counter-Strike then at night, and you try to get some sleep because you need to wake up at 6 a.m. That brings other kinds of challenges. Mm-hmm. So, let's call it sleep deprivation, maybe.
Yeah.
But 2 years of these kind of challenges were not easy if I go back in time and think about it. Mm-hmm. So I continued in that company... and then I worked for other projects, but mostly Java classic, let's call it back then for those years, the so-called classic stack for building projects and generating value for companies was struts, some JavaScript to make some UI or a web interface, so struts, and then for persistence, Hibernate was almost the de facto in any projects we were building, and then classic relational databases.
Yeah, exactly. Those transactions. All of course, you know, the entire business logic in the views, in JSPs, and a little bit in the actions.
But I remember when I was working also, my graduation project from university was I thought I'll play and combine like some, a bit of UI was in struts, a bit in JSF. I tried to progress with JSF, but then making those things work in the same Word file at the same architecture.
Because did the state get lost of JSF? Exactly. So
I ended up doing like a little module for some management of some things in JSF, and then the rest classic struts architecture, struts actions, and but
what happened after university?
I did two or three more years of this classic outsourcing, and then I, let's call it maybe a bit luck, I was among the first 15 or 12th or 13th employee of Betfair.com establishments in Romania. So Betfair.com, late 2006, decided to build and expand. They were mostly London-based software development company, and then they expanded in Romania. But they did have lots of traffic. They did have lots of challenges, software engineering challenges. And inside Betfair.com, for example, the author of the book Continuous Delivery, he was in there in LMAX in a prototyping team inside Betfair.com. So a lot of smart guys from which I could learn about. And the leader who created that entity in Romania, who moved from London to set up everything in Cluj-Napoca, Jakan Fletcher, hopefully, or maybe he will end up hearing your podcast. That person, Jakan, he supported me, and he's actually the person who sponsored the first ever Transylvania Java User Group events. He was, after he saw the excitement or the first meetings or the pictures when I started this community.
Was the Transylvania Java User Group your idea?
I heard it from others while I attended. I heard the concept of Java User Groups, I don't know, online or something like that, but the big moment was March 2007. I was offered a ticket at the QCon conference in London, and I ended up having beers with the person, the persons who were back then the JUG leaders of Paris, London.
Was it Jose?
Yeah. No, before Jose, there was before Jose, someone else, long hair, moved to Portugal or Spain or
Antonio Goncalves.
Yes, Antonio.
Antonio, he was on the podcast. Great guy.
Antonio, and two others encouraged me. I asked them various questions, so they encouraged me. Hey, just go and just send this email to this person. So I remember Michael Hütermann, who was also a guest of Transylvania Java User Group, he was the so-called approver of my Java User Group showing up on the map. I had to send an email to some distribution list, and then someone had to approve, yes, I accept you as a Java. But I had to have a meeting. We had to have some.
Okay.
After creating the first event.
Michael was from Cologne, and he was known in Java 1. He had also big hat, always, you know.
He was here. He came to Amsterdam last autumn. We had a beer.
Okay.
He Yeah, he came also to Cluj. He had two sessions, as far as I remember. So that's how it all started with the Javazer group. Those people encouraging me and sharing, hey, just go for it. Just do it. Do this. All you need to do is send this email. And then Betfair.com, a leader of the Romania organization, he funded and sponsored for everything in the first sessions to help this community get started.
Great touch. And Betfair, I guess, was also written in Java, right, back then?
We did have quite a lot of Java backend. Yeah, that's how I continued inside Betfair.com building or working in Java. Till 2011, when I got an opportunity to switch tracks and do more engineering leadership than individual contributor.
And what I remember from Java User Group Transylvania is, you know, the great Duke logo. Looks like Dracula. You did it? You created the logo? No?
No, I had a designer inside Betfair.com created it. He deserves credit. His name is Otilo Sabo.
But this is actually, I think you had one of the best t-shirts ever, Transylvania Java User Group, with the Dracula, you know, Duke. So it was iconic.
Yes. Yes, I do also like it. And I think, every time I was going to some conference, I was trying to ask the, like I remember at Spring One in Amsterdam, the first ever Spring One conference in Europe, Rod Johnson and his co-founder from Austria, I forgot his name.
I know his name. Yeah. I will remember. Yeah, he's a really nice guy.
They took pictures with the t-shirt. So to me, it was a very, a very high honor to see them enjoying the t-shirt.
Yeah, I have two t-shirts. So I think I was twice in Transylvania, I guess. I remember once, but the second time, I don't know, maybe I also found, you know, two slide decks. And I think I did the first one and then what can be improved or best practices.
Yeah, you did two evenings. Did 2 evenings 11 years ago. You stayed for 2 days and then you did two consecutive evenings.
Okay. This is why. Okay. And was it good for you, the Java user experience? I mean...
Yeah, I've observed that I was getting energy and I was feeling excited to see people leaving the room with some extra knowledge or a bit of something new or hearing an idea. So it was not easy. I consumed a lot of personal time. If I look back, preparing or organizing and then making sure everything is set up, that's a lot of the invisible part that folks don't see. I invested a lot of time. It was a project I was very passionate about, and I wanted the community there to, and I think I kept repeating this almost every session. Like the little intro I was making always was finishing with, "Hey, if you leave this room with something new or something you're excited to try, then for me, you've made my day." I organized maybe 62 before I left Romania.
Wow.
Something like that. Maybe 60. 60.
So you started, the Java User Group started when? Which year?
2008, April, I think, or May.
And when you left Romania?
I left in 2017. April.
Okay. So you were really passionate because you mailed me several times, and back then, yeah, as always, a lot to do. But back then as well, there was crazy times with the Java 6, lots of demands. I was in crazy projects, and they said you had to come. And what happened to me is some of my clients asked, "Can you go to Cluj and help the teams just explain things or work with them?" So I was there in Cluj several times, and then I said, "Okay, it's no problem. We can actually, if you like, we can do the Java user group." And this is how it happened. And I met you personally in an old hotel. And we had a nice chat. And so a funny moment at the Java user group. So I was a little bit proud because I said, okay, there's a t-shirt with the Dracula and everything is Dracula. And I said, okay, we can do actually some Dracula coding. And someone stood up and said, you know what? We cannot hear about Dracula anymore. It's like, okay, what we can do then? So I got do no liquor, do Zuitka and Palinka. It's like, okay, yeah, let's do it. So I need to know names from you.
Yeah.
And this was actually pretty cool. So together we implemented something and I found the code. This is interesting because I was DevDocs now and I wanted to see what I actually did. And the code looks like actually modern. So this is the interesting part. There were enums, there were events. So I could actually migrate the code to Quarkus and make it work in, I don't know, 10 minutes. So it was like, you know, zero micro. So back then it was very modern, which is good because I thought maybe I wrote, you know, whatever, but it actually looked modern. And I remember the audience was great. So we had lots of fun and there are lots of attendees. So it was like more than 100 in the room, what I remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were times in its peaks, mm-hmm. the attendee numbers were on average between 120, 150. Mm-hmm. It took some time. It took the word of mouth to spread and for people to share, hey, there's this event, let's go. But it took maybe 2, maybe 3 years until that core, like I remember people on their faces. I remember seeing them constantly. I remember the same core group of people being there. And it was a nice experience. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you left Romania and worked for what? So you switched from Betfair to?
Well, from Betfair, I joined a little startup in Romania. Mm-hmm. The founder of what was among the first 3 maybe social networks ever created, highfive.com, mm-hmm. which at its peak had the third largest traffic in the world, highfive.com. Mm-hmm. He was a regular attendee at the Romania GoToWeb conference or something like that. So he had an idea and then I ended up him asking me, hey, I want to build a team in Romania. Are you in? So I took this challenge of creating from scratch a team. That startup didn't work. It shut down after less than 2 years.
Was then it Java at least?
Yeah, it had some Java, but okay. Not...
this was the problem. If this would be all Java, it would succeed, you know? If you do a little bit Java, this is actually, you know, doomed to fail. This was... next time, if you do a startup pure Java, then it would work.
So I will try to summarize in 3 minutes 8 years of my... or the last 8 or so years. That startup didn't work. I got an opportunity to come and take over a team inside Uber.com based in Amsterdam. So I relocated to Amsterdam in mm-hmm. spring 2017. I was accountable for a team which had all the cash paid trips around the world. Back then, Uber had mm-hmm. 33% of all its trips mm-hmm. paid in cash. And people didn't know because the whole vision of Uber was you get into a car, you tap a button at the end, and that's it. Mm-hmm. But Latin America, Africa, Asia, mm-hmm. they were all still quite large on cash. Then a health tech startup I was involved into, also in the Netherlands.
Well, also a bit Java, I guess, right, Uber?
No, that was PHP.
Oh, I guess this is why also there is no more cash at Uber. Couldn't be successful. This is why, you know. Okay.
Then I've helped scale an online marketplace for rare and unique objects. Sort of imagine an eBay, but for curated, hand-curated objects.
And I thought, you know, UFO rack, you know, your UFOs, you know, rare objects. Uh-huh.
Katawiki.com. Mm-hmm. I was in charge of its payments, logistics, software related, but that was heavy on Ruby, Ruby on Rails, we had to migrate, for example, from
I would cut everything out. So the last would be, you know, just the Java user group. So PHP not allowed on this podcast. Ruby's a little bit better, but still, okay.
And now I'm in AWS. I'm in an organization that takes care of the code suite services, as in starting from code commit, code build, code deploy, code connections, code pipelines. We've been through a reorganization, and now in the Netherlands, we own this collection of services, and we want to do justice and improve the experience of builders by leveraging these building blocks.
I didn't know that, and this is perfect, because now this podcast paid out for me, because I wanted to create an issue. This was my to-do since July, and code build ships with images, right?
So we can talk more, yes.
I just give you a requirement, and my requirement is that starting with today evening, code build will support Coreto 25. You know, this is my experience. You know, as soon as possible, we need Coreto 25. And I already created issues in the past for 21, because I'm just developer. So this is what I use in my projects. I use code build and code pipeline a lot. It's a great product, and serverless and combine it with Event Bridge and AWS. I didn't know that, actually.
We can clarify more. I'm not the only person, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
But we can talk more and clarify things. I do have a hard stop. I apologize.
I also had a hard stop. I will re-invite you back.
Continue. I'm fine to do a part two, because we haven't, maybe I talked too much and I...
No, it's fine. This was how Transylvania Java User Group happened. And I will invite you back, and we talk about code pipeline, code build, and what I do, actually. So I can give you, explain what I do and give him feedback. But your job is to make sure that we immediately get Coreto 25 everywhere, because it's Java LTS. And this is very important for developers that we can actually use it out of the box without installing it, you know. Where people can find you? You are somewhere on Twitter, LinkedIn, or whatever?
Yeah, on LinkedIn, you can see me, but I'm not active in other spaces right now. I do have a Twitter account, but I don't remember when is the last time I
wrote
anything there. LinkedIn is my only is the only place I open and read, maybe, but I'm also not posting regularly there. Let's continue. I'm open to...
Yeah, thank you. This will be a perfect.
If you have time, I can continue to...
Okay, thank you a lot, and see you next time.